This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting,
lightsaber clashing,
the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping,
banshee flying,
Space Mountain launching,
galaxy rewinding,
what is the whole network galaxy rewinding,
fireworks igniting,
world of other worlds for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this ad.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Once in a lifetime dog, you can say, that they felt like that was, you know, as good as they ever had. And, you know, that breed of dogs is just, you know, they stood the test of time. So far they've been, we can say we've been talking about them since the mid-90s. That was when you know, old Zeb was around, and now we're in 2025, and, you know, still can talk about them because there's still a strong wipeout dog out there winning every night, it seems like, in the hunts.
Well, that's for sure. They've certainly made their mark. Folks, the voice you hear this evening or morning, whatever time you happen to be listening, is that of Billy Bell, no stranger to the world of competition hunting, a guy that's left pretty good, pretty deep steps in those swamps and creek bottoms of our sport over the years. And I'm so happy to have you on the podcast, Billy. We were just talking a little bit there for our listeners to catch them up about you being on a podcast before on the Coon Hunting University podcast with Eddie Simmons and Tyler Duncan. And you were kind of the guy that convinced Barry Kitty and Mike Ferguson to come on and talk about those amazing wipeout dogs. But Billy, it's great to have you on the show. I know that you were very busy. In fact, when I reached out to you, you said, well, once you got the World Hunt behind you, you might have a little time. And I'm sure thankful that you found a little bit of time here to talk with us. You were mentioning there before I pushed the red button that you were trying to remember when we met. Do you remember when that was, Billy?
When did you go to work for PNC?
I went to work. By my recollection, I met you and your brother Avery at probably at either the National Championship in Flora. That was my first hunt that I worked for PKC, and that was June of 1998. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all the hunts at Aurora and all. So would it have been that early?
Yes, I'd say that was what I was thinking. It would have been in the late 90s, because I remember, I guess, had Larry bought it.
Yeah, he bought it at the World Hunt, which would have been 97. All right? And I came to work in June of 98. The first hunt I went to was the National Championship, and it was in Flora that year.
Yeah, that's probably the first time we met, maybe. Yeah. I do remember maybe that one, or like you said, it's a Aurora at tennis.
Well, yeah.
That was a special place to have a coon hunt.
Oh, my goodness, wasn't it? I've never traveled all over the country, Billy, as you have. But, you know, I've never been to a venue, as we say, like the Tennis Center. I mean, that atmosphere is just simply amazing, wasn't it?
It was. It was very special times for the people that was there. And it was just almost like walking into a family reunion in a lot of ways. Because you got to catch up. You got to see people that you hadn't seen in some time. And, you know, then to me, the coon hunts was, you know, that was the big one, the World Hunt. And,
sure.
You know, there was a lot of open event hunts. You had, you know, your few pro hunts a year. But to me, that World Hunt, I think, was the big one. You know, like it was our Super Bowl.
Oh, it was, for sure.
And, you know, you got, like I say, it was a it's a perfect place around Western Kentucky to host a coon hunt. I mean, they had great coon hunting. I think still to this day, got, you know, really good coon hunting around that area. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of places to go out from. I was excited to hear that. I think Steve Yan or a few of them had going to try to get the Nationals.
I had heard it was going to Aurora.
And going to be. Going to be in October, so I'm looking forward to that one.
I'm going to make that one. I promise you, a chance to go back to the Tennis Center for a hunt would be just amazing to me. It really would. Well, do you remember hunting with me one night at the Super Stakes?
I, I, I do remember me and you drawing.
We didn't have a great hunt. The coons weren't cooperating very much. In fact, yeah. I think that same year I drew your brother. I don't know if it was the earlier. Were we in a late round or was it the early round cast? Do you remember?
Steve, I can't remember. Either. But me and Avery both helped.
Camden
yes, that's right. They used satellite clubs out of Camden, and me and him both would guide casts out of that club. Then they started moving it on down there closer to us at the interstate, and
That's where we met there at that truck stop right on the interstate. What's that? Yep. What's that fella? That colorful guy that was there at the
Jerry McAfee.
Is he still living?
Yeah, he's right here. He lives on my farm, actually.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, I get to see him pretty regularly.
Well, that's great. That's great.
He's been like a him and my dad was good friends years ago. And Jerry had moved off, worked all over and actually lived up in Kentucky. And he got to know Roy Tramble, used to go hunting with Roy, Jimmy Guess, lived in that area up there where they was. And, Roy thought a lot of Jerry, so he.
Oh, absolutely.
He put him to be the hunt director over that, where we met at this club. So Jerry would get everybody up and out of there.
He did it with a flair, too. He was a character, wasn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Huh? Well, that's great. Right. Yeah. Well, those are good memories, you know. I worked for PKC from 98 to 2004. The World Hunt in 2004 was my last one with PKC. So, man, I've been back to Salem, and it's a good place and there's good hunting and all that, but the atmosphere, it doesn't compare to me, and with the roar.
No, it don't seem, I don't know why that is, but to me, it ain't the same. The coon hunting's probably a little better because you're going further north and, there's probably more coons that got scored and it gets scored in Illinois than they are. In Kentucky, but in my opinion, I don't know. It's something was really special. But like we talked about earlier, about the tennis court, seeing everybody. I loved that. Just the big open room.
When
you walked in, you could see it. You could almost see everybody. You didn't have to. And the hunting is really good. It's really good up there.
Well, I drew a lot of different places over the years and, always had good hunts, always had a good time, I didn't, obviously I never won it, but what I would do, I'd usually take the cheap way out. I'd hunt my free entries and then maybe one more night and that's about all. Of course, I was working, we worked 10 nights in a row because we had the Super Stakes and the World Hunt all at the same time and the youth hunt.
It was a long week for everybody.
It was for sure. Well, I was kind of insulated being with UKC all those years, and didn't really realize what a community PKC had, with their hunters and all. And it was a different dynamic for sure, And it was fun. I just enjoyed it so much those years. That I was with PKC. I remember the one year that your brother really had a good hunt, and I can't remember if it was Super Stakes.
It was a 2004 fall Super Stakes.
He blistered a man. He put on a clinic. What was that little female's name he was hunting? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. It was a little female called Tizzy. Her daddy was the Thunder Wild Clyde dog that me and my brother had. We studied for a little bit. We bought him off of Harold Edwards and Dwayne Boyd in Alabama. And he had already done quite a bit of winning.
We
bought him. And then we bought him and started breeding him a little bit. They had bred him some, and we kind of continued breeding him. And Tizzy might have been the time that we had him. We might have made that cross. But anyway, she was a good little female. Lloyd C. Morris and another guy was partners in her.
Okay.
And Lloyd, yeah. So Lloyd C. and me was partnered in the Peaches female.
So, yeah, yeah. And I want to talk about her for sure. Well, yeah. I was doing a play by play that night at the tennis center when that scores were coming in.
Remember, it was a bad storm that night.
Yeah.
It was real. There was tornadoes all around that particular night. And they went to a good place. I think they might have went over to Cadiz, Kentucky, however you pronounce it.
And, yeah, they say Cadiz over there, but if you go to Ohio, it's Cadiz. So, you know, there's one up there, too. Yeah, they always call it Cadiz, I think.
Yeah, that might have been one of the higher scores that's ever been in a super state.
Do you remember how much it was?
I want to think he had close to 1,000 points.
It was up there.
It was. And
she just kept treeing them, man.
It got down to two dog cast because Duke's female knowers, I think that she was scared of the storms. I think that maybe the no hunting time got her, and then it left him and Strickland. Maybe John was hunting a crossbred dog out of habit. I want to think.
And I know which dog you're talking about. That was out of that cross with Cliff Day's female.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he done good. It was at the time probably the bigger, you know, major hunt my brother had won. He'd been in a lot of hunts before, but that was, you know, anytime you can win a super stake, that's a big accomplishment.
Well, Avery's always smiling. But I never saw anybody smile any bigger than he was that night when he came in.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah, those are the times that you remember, Billy. You know, you never forget those days. Yeah. And I'm thankful that the good Lord, he could have helped me a little better with my legs. I can't quite keep up with the cast like I used to. Well, I can't. But my mind's still pretty sharp as far as remembering all those good times and all. And that, you mentioned the Carolina Peach female. Now, we're going to get into your partnership and all with Roger, and I'm going to talk about that for sure. But of course, you had the Clyde dog, and maybe there's several good dogs there that I'm missing. But now Peach was a 2000 model, if I'm right, and she's 20th place among females on the PKC book. She had $75,000.
That was back when the hunts didn't pay like they did.
That's for sure.
It was hard to achieve that $75,000 back in.
Right. Well, she was, as I recall, pretty good sized female, white, mostly white. Mm-hmm. Tell me about Peach and how you came to have her and some of your hunts or anything you can remember about her.
Yeah. Well, the story on Peaches, my brother.
Peaches, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Carolina Peaches. That's what I named her.
Yeah.
My brother and Avery and Peanut Scott was partnered on Peaches' mom.
Can I stop you right there just a minute? You know, we really need to be in prayer for Peanut. He's going through a real struggle right now with his health. And what a great guy. And he comes by our camp out at White River, and he was out and had fish fry with us this year. And also, I just want to ask all the listeners out there to please remember Peanut Scott in your prayers. He's going through a bunch of treatment and all for that dreaded cancer. And we just pray that, you know, that'll all come out and it'll be a good report. But I just wanted to mention that, Billy.
I think every night I lay down, there's a lot of people right here in our little communities that's got cancer right now, and I try to name every one of them and say a prayer, and Peanut's one of them.
Yeah.
Ever since I found out he had it.
Sure.
But
getting
back to Peaches. So, and that was a good litter. So there was So Avery and Peanut had Annie, and they crossed her with Moose and wipe out Moose, wipe out Zach.
Right.
And so you had Peaches in that litter. It's, they'd done quite a bit of winning. You know, Peanut and Mike Creasy had the Willie dog wipe out Willie.
Yeah.
They was mates. And there was some more. When there's a male right down in Florida called Chopper. There was eight of them, but the whole litter was a real nice litter of dogs. Peaches and Willie was, you know, the more known of the two, but they was, you know, they had probably more opportunities too because of who had them. And, but getting back to the story of how I got her, so they made the cross. I didn't get one of them as a puppy. I could have. Peanut carried them, that litter, up there to the St. Jude hunt. Every year we have the world's largest coon hunt. So, you know, supposedly it's, you know, it's for the good cause, St. Jude coon hunt.
Yeah, and Parsons.
That's right. A lot of people gather around here and buy and sell dogs.
So
Peanut carried the litter up there and sold them all right there from that fairgrounds. Peaches was actually the last one to get sold. Sam Wood, he was local boy from up here in Lexington. He passed a few years ago, but he was interesting one, but didn't have the what they was asking price. Mm-hmm. So Peanut told my brother, said, I'm not leaving here until I get rid of all these pups. I've got the one I want. I'm gonna." And Avery said, "Well, Sam was wanting one." He said, "Let's go see if we can get meet up with him, and we'll see if he'll just take her." So they, I think Sam had $150, and they said, "That's good for us. You, here's your pup." And so that was Peaches, and she was probably 3 months old then. And so the guy we was talking about earlier, Jerry McPhee, lives on my farm. He had come back from Ohio. He was up there with visiting his mom, stayed up there with her for a while. But he come back here and was renting a trailer out here from my mom and dad at the time, and getting back into hunting, wanted to find a young dog. So Avery had told him about a male that he had give Sam, that Sam would probably, you know, sell him or, you know, give him or whatever. So me and him got in a truck one day and drove up here at Lexington. And Sam was at living at the time back with his mom and dad. And his dad used to coon hunt, handle dogs for my dad. And his name was Billy Wood. They called him Three Fingers. And
I bet there's a story there too.
Oh, yeah, there he is. There's that whole family. William Wood is, he still coon hunts. He's a contractor up in Lexington now. Him and Tracy Bailey hunt.
They got
dogs together now, William. But anyway, so this has been William's brother, Sam. So we went up there, and as soon as we pulled up, we called him Little Billy. Sam's dad had come out and was talking to me and Jerry, and he said, "Boy, that little female that Sam got from Peanut and Avery sure making a good one." And so he was building her up, and we hadn't even seen her yet. And we walked in the backyard back there. They had the kennels down there off the hill. So we walked down there. Jerry was there to look at that other male dog. When we seen Peaches come out of the dog box, it just caught me and Jerry off guard, because we'd never seen a female quite look like her. I mean, she was, you know, like you were saying,
she was distinctive looking.
Yeah, she was big. She was, you know, when she was only like 8 months old, if I can remember right, when we got her that day. She was probably 65, 70 pounds at 8 months old, and real thick. Big old head, looked like a male dog.
We
couldn't believe it was a female. So when me and Jerry seen her, Jerry went to Sam. He said, "Sam, I'm not interested in this male anymore. I'm interested in that female." He said, "What would you take for her?" And he said, "Jerry, I don't want to sell her." And I think we left there and we didn't. Jerry couldn't get him to get a price, but finally maybe he called him back or they worked out a price, and best I remember is like 1500. Because I think Sam thought that was a high price for an 8-month-old pup back then. This would have been like, you know, early 2000, 2001.
Right.
And so Jerry said, I'm on her. So he went and got her, bought her all, give Sam the money, brought her back. And we went hunting that night. I had a dog at a Clyde that I'd done a little bit of winning with. And I remember we hunted on my farm that night, first time we ever cut them two loose. They hit down in a ditch and struck a coon. Peaches was right there with a dog I called Roller. And they both just drove a track in there and treed together, had a coon.
Oh, my dog.
We recut them. She followed him right down the ditch again. They treed another one down there. I think we treed two real quick. And I'd seen enough right then, though. He had a good buy
for
what she was.
And for sure.
Anyway, so he was... Jerry was going back up north back with his mama, and he asked me, he said, do you want to buy in on her? He said, if you help me pay your mom and dad rent, I'll just give you half of Peaches. I said, deal, we'll do that. So I got her. This went to Hunter. I remember really what set her doing better. Me and Scott Engel left. Yeah. I met him in Indianapolis, Indiana. It would have been right after the World Hunt that year, because he was hunting Beller Ann, got in the Final Four that year.
Mm-hmm. And that was the year Stone won it, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yep, because I was out on the cast the night he was hunting Ann. Yeah.
Yeah. And we met in Indianapolis. We went on up and hunted with Russell Beller. We stayed at Russell's place, but we actually hunted with Brian Whitted and him. And we killed, I think in 3 nights, we killed like 30 something coons. And she had started, you know, really progressing after I come back from there. Cause she was treeing coons, but not like, I think that this some 3 nights had done so much to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a natural, Steve. She was, I said this, you know, me and Jerry, I guess, done some training. It just pretty much carried her. We didn't have to do a whole lot to her. She was one of them that just had a God gift. You know, he touched one of them. You know, she was special.
Yeah.
We knew it from day one.
You said that the first night you took her, she was on two with the older dog. Yeah.
She just was, I'm going to say this, she was probably a good of 9-10 months old pup as I'd ever seen at that time. Because when the ability come, it just like she went from a puppy one night to an old dog the next. I mean, it was that quick.
You gotta love
and, it. And so, you know, $75,000 later, she made her mark on.
Oh, definitely.
Down here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I bred her 3 times. She had 3, didn't get big litters. She was a great coon dog, but she wasn't a good mama. I think this and that she looked like a male and act like a male. So I just think she just wasn't
the like hormones a normal might female. Not
yeah,
have
she,
been
yeah,
there.
Yeah, she wasn't like a normal female that. So I had a breeder first to wipe out Coy. She had 5 puppies that lived, and all 5 of them made really, really nice dogs. The second cross was Tequila Sunrise, and she had a little female, only one that lived, ended up living out of that, was a little female called Georgia Cyclone.
Yeah.
If you look, she's number one reproducing female in PKC.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then the third cross I made was a dog at Barry Kidium and Sumner Cullum had, a wipeout hillbilly.
Right.
And I kept a female out of that cross, was called Bernice. That's what I named her, Big Bad Bernice. I actually got a female out here now at my house. My oldest daughter, we bred Bernice to threesome, and had a female called B, and I called her B3. And I bred her to a local dog up here, a Bobby Brown owned, and his name was Late Night Trip. He was directly off a track man, and I got a little female right here now off that litter. She's 4 now, and, you know, I ain't hunted her like I should, as far as I, you know, since I've been hunting dogs for Mr. Chable. I kind of didn't put as much time in on her as I should have, you know, but I he was paying me.
Was this the dog you called Rachel?
No. That was one that Roger had bought.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. But no, this Peaches female, I got, that's the only thing I got left. It goes back to
Peaches. I see. Well, now, did you win the St. Jude hunt with her?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I think I was there when you won it.
I won it 3 years in a row.
Oh, okay.
With Peaches. I was talking about 75,000. That was just in PKC. Right. She was a UKC Grand Knight champion, and you know, I titled her out in just about everything. She was AKC. She had gotten in a Final Four of the World Hunt 1 year down there in South Carolina.
That's right.
Yeah, won two. She won two trucks, one up here at Carl Perkins, and then one at Tunica or Lula, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And she won the St. Jude hunt 3 years in a row. Just a great dog. I mean, she was so dominant in the competition hunt.
Was it about her that made her a winner, Billy?
She could tree any kind of coon. You know, there's a lot of dogs out here kind of one style. Some of them's two style for us. Some dogs can run a coon. If a coon's on the ground, run it and tree it pretty good. Some dogs can got a knack tree layup coons, just, you know, follow tree on coons that's been laid up for a while. She could do all. She could run a coon with the best of them. She could go to treeing them like squirrels if you put her in that kind of coons. If they was laid up in the timber and dogs couldn't track, you know, that she could just go. I don't know if she just went and checked trees or winded. She just had an extra nose that she didn't see dogs have. Yeah. I just seen her. I mean, I could tell you so many stories that.
Well, tell me one or two.
Well, I'm just saying there was lots of casts. I can't recall all of them, but there was a lot of casts that, you know, I'd come in with over 500 points. So, you know, several of them close to 1,000. There was some of them casts in St. Jude that year. I had some buddies that I'd go to their places because they had feeders and stuff out. And, you know, she would tree 5-6 coons in that cast. I mean, just coon treeing was real simple to her. She could tree a coon, and I've turned her loose the quickest I've ever seen her one night tree a coon from when I unsnapped her and I had her treed in 20 seconds. you know, she could just tree a coon quick.
Well, she had it on her mind. You know, that was her purpose in life, you know.
Absolutely. You could take her off of a coon she just treed, And just walk her a little piece. She forgot, but she was done with that coon. She figured out real quick, you know, just the importance of getting that next coon, and that was so important in a cast.
Oh, yeah.
Some dogs get hung up on one coon they tree. They their mind can't get off of it quick. They want to get out there and then go back around that area. She could. I've seen her so many times catch a coon on the ground. And while the other dogs may come in there and help fight it, but she might just let them go to fighting a coon, and then she'll by the time you got there where that them other dogs are fighting a coon, she'd have another one treed out here beside them. Seen her do that several times.
Yeah. You gotta love it. How old was she when she died, Billy?
She was 10 days shy of being 15.
Wow, you had her a long time.
And the year. The year that she died was 2015, and her grandpups, Bill and Jane, finished first and second in the PKC World Hunt in 16.
That's right. They would be grandpups of hers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Out of
Cyclone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man. What a great story. When you have one like that, Bill, you know, that's a pretty high mark to try to achieve again, you know.
I think God puts special things in her life and blesses us at the perfect time, and she was in my life at the perfect time. He knew I loved coon hunting, and I think he sent her in my life, you know, at that time, just to you know, for that reason, you know,
just
she was definitely a blessing to me.
You know, it makes me think of how many probably great puppies out there that never really got a chance. But Peach was fortunate too, Peaches, that she got to, you know, that you got a hold of her. Because if, you know, the average guy out there, he might have said, well, I don't like this little bit about her, or I don't like that little bit, you know, and ship her down the road or never really give her a chance. And you took her to town. You weren't afraid to take her to town.
So. No, she was one. When I had her, there was just really nothing I'd drawed. The toughest dog that she ever went up against, in my opinion, was the dog that Clay and Tam had up here, old Hard Rock. Yeah. He was the only dog that really competed higher. I would say there was nights that he would beat her. She beat him maybe a night or two, but it wasn't much. It was coon for coon most time. You know, he might beat her one night, outstruck her and treat a coon. He might treat two to her one night. I mean, he was such a dominant dog.
He had some of the same breeding in him, though.
Oh, he was. It went back to old Zeb. I mean,
yeah.
He was.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Family of dogs, for sure. Well, what else after Peach? Let's see. I want to talk to you about when you teamed up with Roger and all, but is there any dogs that you had between Peaches and that partnership that you recall?
Well, I had a daughter to Peaches, that Bernice female.
Right.
And at that time, I had just got married. I got married in 2011. And
you did very well, young man. I see the Facebook pages and stuff.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yep, she's a special woman. It takes a special woman to stay with a coon hunter.
Well, her name is Stephanie.
That's right. And she'd get on to me if I didn't say her name.
And I'm not trying to put any kind of, you know, damper on the story. My wife and I had a stillborn baby girl when I was in the Air Force in Japan, and her name was Stephanie Ann Fielder. And so that name will always be special to me. You know, it's a beautiful name.
I got two daughters now, Aubrey and Mia, and they've really changed my life for the good.
I see. Now you've moved to Nashville then.
No, that's on her Facebook. My wife got from Nashville. She used to live in Nashville. Her and her sister moved up there. She went to Murfreesboro and got a photography degree and stayed in that area, just building her name. She does food photography.
I wanted to talk to you about all of that too, but I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I'm definitely glad that you mentioned Stephanie and all. But anyway, when I saw Nashville there, I said, you know, my dad's was from Dixon, you know, and I've got a lot of family around there and all. So when did you first of all, we say that, you know, Roger Schaible, I think everybody in the coon hunting world knew Roger. I met him in 1984 when he won the Purina Award with the Redbone dog, Hunter's Famous Amos. And we gave him the award, had the banquet and everything in a hotel there in Nashville.
They had that picture, Steve, at his funeral.
Did the picture, they really?
You and Roger. Yep, that was up there on behind the family at the service.
Well, I'm honored by that for sure. What a great guy. And Roger Gibson was his handler at that time.
Yeah.
And I still talk to Roger occasionally. He's a good friend of my buddy Nubbin Moore. You know, he lives down there in Alabama. And so we drive through there going to White River. Sometimes we call Roger and talk to him. But Roger Schaible owned the Pepsi distributorship or whatever. I don't know what you call it there in Decatur,
Pepsi bottling something. Yeah. Yep. They own two plants. They got one at Decatur. And they got one at Coleman. And
now he was originally from Coleman, I believe, wasn't he?
That's right. His Rogers family, a lot of them still live in Coleman.
I see.
But he met his wife, and I think they moved to Decatur and had four children. And and his main plant now is it Decatur?
I got you. Well, how old was Roger when he passed? Do you remember?
He was 73. He would have been
wow.
If he'd have made it this next month, April 16th, I think is his birthday, and he would have been 74. He's almost 74.
Yeah, cancer was it, or did he have
no
heart
he
problems?
Had, he had a. I didn't. I knew when we. See, we'll go back. You was going to ask me how I got with him.
So yeah. Back. Let's do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, good. I'll go back.
Yes.
And I was talking about Bernice. So I had this Bernice female out of Peaches.
Yeah.
And I'd hunted her one a little bit. But, you know, I worked at a utility job then and couldn't go to a lot of the bigger hunts. But I just went to what I could. Gary Elliott, he was a friend of my dad's and me. Mm-hmm. I went down and hunted with Gary, me and my dad. And he every year, you know, he was talking about the St. Jude hunt. Gary would come to it. And he had left maybe the Spring Super Stakes. I can't remember. The Spring Super Stakes and the St. Jude usually fall around close to the same weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So he went and Roger had bought her this little female called Cashflow. And in 2014, that spring they bought her around. I'm thinking April because Gary come here and he said he was going to partner up with Roger on her, and I put a bug in his ear that was been in April. So I said, I ain't got nothing, Gary, for the fall Super Stakes, and I knew she had won the junior division that year. That year before, and I said, if y'all want me to handle her up there, I'd be honored to. If you're looking for somebody to, so he called me in August. Gary did and said, I hadn't met Roger yet, but he said, we've been talking. We want you to handle her. And I said, okay, Gary. So he brought her to me. I kept her, from then till. The Super Stakes was in September, middle of September.
Yeah.
And I can remember it was real dry up there that year. And, man, she just looked so good that week.
Was that up there in Indiana at Sullivan?
In Salem.
Salem?
Okay. Mm-hmm. The spring would have been in Indiana.
Yeah, that's right.
This would have been the fall. Anyway, so I won it that year. That was her senior year. So I won the fall Super Stakes that year. In 14 with cash flow. And so that kind of made her a two-time Super State champion. She'd won it as her junior year and then kind of won it back-to-back. So that was pretty special.
Sure.
But anyway, so that got me tied up, with them. I was, hunting for Gary and then Roger started. Right after that, Roger really got to calling me. And, I'd finally met him in October of that year at the World Hunt, because they wanted me, since I'd done so good in the Super Stakes, they said, go carry back down there and see what you can do at the World. And we made a pretty good deep run that year. I think I won three casts, got beat in the late round by David Dial, getting in the top six, I think. And
so that is deep.
Done good with her, and when Roger had bought a little female from Mike Carroll called Paint, Slow Talking Paint, and
I remember that too.
Yeah, and I started. Roger wanted me to get her, started hunting her for him, and I'd done pretty good with her. I won 40,000-50,000 in PKC with her, and we just kind of. That was in 14, from 14 to, till he died a few weeks ago. That we'd had a close relationship. I'd probably talk to him as much more than my wife. He'd call me, seems like ever, you know, we might talk 10 times a day sometimes during that 10 years, 11 years.
Well, I can identify.
I'm definitely going to miss him.
Oh, for sure. The sport. Yeah, he was so good for the sport because he invested a lot into the sport.
He was a huge player for so long.
Oh, yeah.
In the sport of coon hunting. He sent several dogs. Him and Gary would send several dogs to the Super Stakes every year. That it would be to a point where it was hard for them to separate all of us because they had so many dogs entered up in them. And we was trying to keep from,
drawing each other.
Bracketing it up. We satellited out. If two or three of his dogs went early, are they going to draw late? So that was always a job for PKC and the guys that tried to separate us
but
out.
But they were glad to have the money. They mm-hmm. work it out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, let's look at some of these dogs right here, and then we'll break them down and go back to and let you tell me a little bit about them. Of course, everybody knows Speed Shifter, the Wicked Speed Shifter. Who named that dog?
Tony Smith. You know, Tony comes up with his kennel, the Wicked.
Yeah.
He had the Wicked Vapor.
Yeah.
And Roger was partnered on that
dog. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that was a good English dog.
Yes.
And Tony told me when he had Vapor, he said, the only reason you got Shifter is I had Vapor. And I said, I believe it. I mean, actually, Alvis Kaufman, he hunted dogs for Roger. He had went up there and started going with Tony some because they didn't live too far apart. And he had been hearing good things about Shifter. And so he went up there and called Roger, said, hey, Roger, Tony's got a nice young male here that's really nice. And so him and, you know, which they was partners on Vapor. So it was easy for Roger to call him and said, hey, Tony, what do you want for Shifter? And they worked out a price and he bought him. And Alvis kept him up there for a little bit and hunted him. And I guess it was Shifter's last Super Stakes. Roger had bought a female called Probate, and so I carried him and Billy Cochran partnered up on her, and I carried because I was hunting dogs some when I wasn't hunting for Roger at that time. I was hunting a dog or two for Billy. Billy had Jesse Jane. I hunted her for him.
Oh yeah,
and so.
I remember her as a pup in the back of the dog box on a four-wheeler at the White River one night. My dog went in with Coy. Coy called me and he said, your dog tripped my tree. And I said, well, when you come out, he'll follow you out. Just leave him alone. He'll be all right. And I went and drove around there. And Jane was I think she was just 8 months old at that time. What I had no idea what she'd achieve,
She was a good one. But anyway, so getting back.
No, go ahead. I get to chasing rabbits, Billy. You have to get me, reel me back in.
So I brought them two dogs home with me after the spring Super Stakes. They were both about the same age. Well, they was the same age. That was their last Super Stakes. I brought them back home and got to hunting them together. And I realized real quick, I liked Shifter. He was what I seen, I just loved how quick he done things. Probate was a good female. She was a running trailing dog. She stayed on the ground a little bit junky, would get off on a deer and run it for, it seemed like all night sometimes. I remember the first time I hunted them two together. I remember this really clear. Shifter treed three singles and Probate never looked up. She had run the whole time. He was treeing coons and she was running and he was treeing them. I was like, wow.
Which one do I want?
And they had actually had more money in her and I called Roger the next day. I said, we got these dog prices mixed up. I said, Shifter's worth more what y'all paid for bait and what she paid for Shifter. But we laughed about it. But anyway, Scott and Randy had been called, or Scott had been called Mingo, and because, she was off of nine, and they had seen her, and they liked her, and Randy really liked her. So Billy sold his part to Randy, and okay. Scott and Roger stayed partners with them on her and just kind of let them take over her. And I just stayed on shifter right then. He was all, at the time, all I needed, all I wanted.
Yeah, I guess.
He had, when I brought him home, he had like 3,000, maybe 4,000 won in PKC at the time. And I won, you know.
Right now, he's got on PKC $180,001.26. Yeah.
So I won, you know, 76,000 of that. 176,000.
He's ninth on the male list and 12th on the all-time PKC list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good one. He was, you know, comparing everybody asks what's the best dogs you're owning. Peaches is still the best all-around dog that I've ever had here. Just like I told you earlier, she could tree any kind of coon. Shifter was really good on a couple different coons. His main thing was his ground speed. It was uncanny. Just turning loose, dropping that country, getting away from dogs. He would strike quick most of the time, but he was just in a hurry. Every time you turn him loose, and it was like that from the recuts too. He was so fast to get the next coon and the next one. When coons was down, Shifter could dominate calf.
He's still living, isn't he?
He is. We started breeding him about 2.5 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
And maybe 3 years ago. But anyway, so he'll be 10 this year. He'll be 10 in July. He's getting on up there, but now he still looks good. I carried him hunting a couple nights ago. Actually, I try to carry him and just give him some exercise. Sure. I think that's important to their health.
Now, what's he out of?
So his daddy's a world champion, Wipeout Threesome. That's Billy Cochran and Stephen Smith. Stephen won what year was it? Stephen won the world hunt. I can't remember either.
But.
You know, Threesome died right after that, won the world hunt. He was and had already made a good mark in the reproduction. I mean, he was you know, throwing some really nice dogs. Shifter was the very first cross. He was the oldest pup out of Threesome. Tony and Steven live in the same town right there in Ellijay, Georgia. And
in the north part of Georgia. Yeah.
Tony had a female that Dave Lawson is off of both of Dave's dogs. He had the little cob and a female called Mighty Mouse. So Cobb goes back to a dog called Rehab. Rehab went back to Bad Habit.
Yeah.
You know, Bad Habit to Rat Attack and Rat Attack to Sackett Jr. So, and all those dogs carried a good, strong reproduction there. They, you know, from Sackett Jr. On down the line, that was some good dogs that, you know, come off of them. And then, you know, Shifter's top side, you know, with Threesome, Zeb 3 was Threesome's daddy. Zeb 3's daddy was Zeb Again. Zeb Again's daddy was Moose. Moose's daddy was Old Zeb. Old Zeb was Coma. And Coma was off of Buster. And Buster was off of Bozo. So all the
Hardwood Bozo, in my mind, is one of the most important dogs in the history of coon hunting.
That's why I went back to him. That's why I named him all the way back from Shifter. That's nine from Bozo. You got Bozo, Buster, Coma, Zeb.
Think about Moose, it.
Zeb Again, Zeb 3, Threesome, Shifter. So
what a foundation, huh?
What dominant winning coon hunts and dominant dogs. And then was the ones I just named was really strong, you know, it's passed it right down the line.
Sure.
And I think Shifter's going to do it. He's already thrown one great one. We lost before Roger died. We had one out of halftime Ruby, Wes Hamilton's female.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wes bred Ruby to Shifter and had a little male dog called Scar. Right. About Scar, we let Anthony King, he was a big part of him, pretty much trained him, won all the money with him.
Yeah.
phenomenal dog. You know, no telling what he would have carried on if that one would have lived.
There was a dog named Scar over in Virginia that won the World Hunt one year way back there, you know, and I know every mm-hmm. time I see that Scar dog's name, I think of that dog. Mm-hmm. But, I know that before I get to the females, I wanted to talk a little bit about Late Round Rock.
Yeah.
He's 13th on the male list and 19th all time mm-hmm. with 137. 554.
Mm-hmm.
You did some winning with Rock.
I still got him here. I still got him here.
Alabama State Championship. I remember mm-hmm. that one.
Yeah, that was just a month or so ago.
Yeah.
And he got in the senior showdown. I got my pro hound yesterday, and I was on the cover of it as the.
Oh, I didn't get mine yet.
One of four. Yeah, we was one of, you know, four. We split. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. the pup shootout split, too. And anytime you put $9,000 in your pocket, that ain't a bad payout.
That is not a bad day, is it?
Yeah.
I've seen the time $9 would look good.
No, I'm telling you. Yeah, Rock is he's a good one. He was off of Overdrive. Roger and Bill Stokes had him. And Overdrive was a good coon dog. Paul Miller raised Rock. He had the mama, I think her name was Star. And so Paul had, they made that cross twice. Paul bred first time to Overdrive, there was a dog that Stokes had called Mo, I think, Mo Money or something like that.
Bill Stokes.
Bill Stokes. Yeah. So Rocks was the second litter out of that. They made that cross twice, and there was several in that second litter done really good. Rock, we got actually Roger owns another one that was a mate to Rock called Hotwire, and I bred her actually a shifter, and there's a bunch of good pups coming out of them out of that cross.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to Rock, he was, you know. I had heard about him when he was young. We tried to buy him when he was young. Roger wanted to buy him. Some guys in Arkansas had him. We offered him a good chunk of money, but they didn't. They wanted a little bit more. And at the time, I had Shifter, and I wasn't really, I wasn't pushing it. But, if I knew what I know now, I'd have had, I don't know how, I might have had more money on Rock or might have had, you just never know. If we'd bought, Rock, then I would have. It'd been a tough one to hunt which one I'd decide.
Well, he's a real houndy looking dog. How does he operate?
He's just a great dog. He's just all around. I will say this. I think I've said this in some of the other podcasts I've done. I've always been a female guy. My dad was. He'd rather hunt females than males. I prefer a female over a male most of every time.
Yeah.
But I'm smart. I know males usually dominate. It's just, sometimes how God's designed things that they've got a bigger, more muscular, and is athletic. And sometimes in sports that just seems to to always come ahead, So anyway, Rock and Shifter both are really rare for male dogs for me because I wouldn't typically not even would want them because of their gender. But they don't act like your typical males. Neither one of them do. They're really smart. And they're really just good in the kennel, in just training, doing things with them. They pick up on things quick. Rock was, which both dogs was really trained before I got. I just kind of kept them conditioned, mm-hmm. kept them, hunting them and keeping them healthy. Now they're both, for sure, to be 10 here in a couple months, and Rock had just turned 8. And when we got Rock, we bought him from Ike Rainey and down in Florida.
My neighbor over here. I live about an hour and half maybe for Mike. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, so we got Rock from Ike, and he was six, and I've had him now for a couple of years here at the house, and he's just been a great dog. He's a competition dog. He's a quick stride dog. He just floats around peeing and trees coons. He can tree multiple kind of coons. He can tree them. He can just fall treat on them. I've seen him, you know, most time he'll open and trail a coon, or you know, maybe it's a hot coon on the ground. He runs it up and trees it. But he's just a solid dog. I've always told people in a hunt with him why it's so hard to beat him. Cause you don't get to strike on him every time. I can almost let him go, and he don't do it in a babbling way. He'll get out there a little piece. Everything else will be quiet, and he'll get to open it. And everybody asked me. He said, "What's he opening on, Billy?" I said, "Whatever he opens on, it goes right to a coon."
It turns into a coon.
Yeah, it turns into a coon. So when he trees one, them other three, he's got to tree two to beat him most of the time.
Mm.
And sometimes in a timely hunt, that's hard to do. And then if he trees two, they got to tree three. And you know how it goes sometimes. So that's why he carries a strong dominance in the competition game.
Oh,
he's just designed to.
Well, at 8 years old, you got a lot of hunts left in him.
Well, he's I can see him starting fatigue a little bit if you hunt him every night. If there's a 3 or 4 night hunt somewhere, mm-hmm. he's gonna get weaker as the week goes. You know, this that age is finally
tell me about
catching up with him. But when he's fresh and he feels good, he can still dominate a calf. Mm-hmm. He is something else when he's on. You just can't hardly beat those dogs. I've been blessed with Roger, and he had the passion to love to buy these good dogs. And he listened to me on some of them, and some of them he didn't. Some of them if Roger wanted a dog, he bought it. He had the means to buy it, and he bought it.
Yeah.
But
well, what about Spice Girl? Did you handle her some?
I did a little bit. We bought her a couple of years ago, and Ryan Croson had her and was winning. Well, Nathan Guthrie and Dale Kinder owned her, and Ryan handled her in several hunts and was just winning everywhere with her. And she had beat us several times, and Roger finally, Dale had talked to Roger and said, tried to get him to buy him out, and him and Nathan and Roger be partners. And I think Roger had been burnt in a few partnerships at the time. And he just wanted to have them all himself. And I remember one night she beat us up in Missouri, Kinder, Missouri. They had a pro classic. And the next day, Roger called me. He said, "I think it's time to buy a Spice Girl." I said, "We might need to buy her so she'll quit beating us." And so we did. We bought her, and we done good with her. I mean, she was older when we bought her. She was seven. And she just turned 9 in February. But I didn't realize she
was that old already. Oh, I know
she don't look it, Steve. She still looks young. She hadn't really grayed up any. Gets around like a rocket ship in the woods. She is no fun to pleasure hunt. She's one of them dogs can get through the country. If they're not moving, she's gonna cover so much ground so quick. She'll get into places where you don't need her to get on mm-hmm. people that, you know, if you just say you had permission on 10,000 acres, she's one of them. She'll find that
5,000 over there
a 100 acres over there that nobody wants.
That's right.
Nobody wants a dog on, and she'll get there. Just have you on pins and needles when you're pleasure hunting.
Yeah. Well, she's won $250,000.
Yeah,
she's number two on the female list and number five all time, I think.
She's not real far behind Ruby. I mean, just how these hunts pay out now, she's just, you know, basically one or two casts away. She almost done it at the $100,000 hunt. Logan Ray was this past one at Clyde won it.
The
Michael Moody.
Moody.
Yeah, she was in the top 16. So she, Michael Ward beat him in that cast there, with JoJo, but, Spice, I think maybe give it away on a bad tree. She don't do that much, but she either made a bad tree or, yeah, I think that's what cost her the cast. Cause if she had had a den, maybe Logan would have won, that way. But it was a, She didn't say that would have probably put her over Ruby there, depending on how she would have done.
Yeah, well, are they still hunting her some?
Yeah. We're actually, we still got her. She's after, this is what I've been since Roger passed, I've been helping the family.
Sure.
Start getting rid of, a few of Roger's dogs she's one.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We'll end up selling.
Well, what about the Heartland Bonnie dog that's number 12 on the female list that Roger owned?
Well, he was partnered with Zach McBee and Eldon on
Coric.
Her. And yeah. Mm-hmm. And
I see.
He helped them out on her. That was a good female too. I mean, Zach's done really good with Bonnie.
Well, you look there, she's number 12 on the female list. And I remember back in the day, in fact, probably the night I hunted with you, I was hunting a little female out of Stone and Molly. I believe I was. And Molly, she was leading the all-time money list there for a long time. I think, what'd she have, like 110 or something like that?
A little more than that.
Cracker, back in the day, he led it there forever,
It's hard to justify those dogs with these dogs now because, them dogs won that kind of money when it was hard to win. The biggest... you had a pro hunt that paid $4,000. They was only like one pro hunt a month back then. You had the nationals that paid, in the 20s. You had the world hunt that paid in the 20s or 30s. If you won a truck, that was a big accomplishment. But nowadays with the bigger payouts and these $6,500 entries and you got your $100,000 hunts, it's, dogs have a lot, because they can do it in one weekend, accumulate a lot of money.
That's right.
It's hard to compare dogs then to dogs now on the winnings. Just like with Peaches, I won $75,000 in her time. It was hard to win. At the time she was just right under Molly. I think. Before she died,
where Molly is now, but back in the day,
she was on top there. I actually passed Molly with Jane. And I think that was the first female to pass Molly.
Did you put on Jane?
When I got her, Coy and Mark had won quite a bit, really a whole lot. Mark won the CHKC World Hunt with Jane. Mm-hmm. That was $40,000 there. That World Hunt paid in that registry. In PKC, they probably her between Mark and Coy probably won $70,000-$80,000, and mm-hmm. I got her and probably won about that same.
Yeah.
I think I won, somewhere close to $70,000-$80,000 with her.
What's your lifetime earnings now in PKC, if you don't mind telling me?
Bill? I think I went over $500,000 here not long ago, Steve. I think that's right. I don't really.
I understand. I don't mean to embarrass you. I just think it's phenomenal, to think that you could do that coon hunting,
That is right. I mean, I never thought, if you'd asked me that question 20 years ago, how the hunts paid out then versus now, I just never seen it coming, but when PKC started having these $6,500 hunts and these bigger pro classics, you was able to achieve a big amount in a weekend.
Yeah.
So that's what really changed.
We used to talk about the guys, winning a pro hunt or something, when you're out there trying to get a pup ticket, running hard all month and make $700-$800,
Yeah.
back in the day. Well, listen, what major wins have you had that kind of stick out in your memory, your kind of favorite ones do you have? Can you think of?
Well, you know, if you go back to Peaches, I guess the winning the truck hunt at Blue, that was a big accomplishment.
Oh, yeah.
The Carl Perkins hunt was right here at the house, and I won it. And you know, done good there. I got in the finals of the AKC World Hunt with Peaches. At the time, that was the first Final Four World Hunt I'd been in.
Yeah.
I think that was in 7 or
You know, I'm proud to hear you say that, Billy, because we worked so hard on that program. You know, I went over to AKC in 2004. Yeah. And we, you know, we tried to put some money out there and all, and we really did. We gave some trucks away and stuff, but you know, the coon hunters, they just wouldn't register their dogs with AKC. You know, and think about it, there's already two registries, UKC and PKC.
I've told people this, what makes PKC and UKC so strong is the history they got on all these dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's still important, really important, even though you got the pro sport that Greg and Scott and Levi is doing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a lot of hunters like the rules and like going to them. I don't think they've got into the dog registry quite as
much. No.
It's going to take a long time to do what UKC and PKC
do. Well, they've managed to do something that we used to say you can't do, and that's, you know, make money just on hunts. Yeah. But the way they've done it is by increasing the entry fees. So there's a good chunk, you know, there left when everything's paid out. Back in the day, you couldn't do that. The way UKC made its money and became the number one registry over those years was through the registration of dogs, the puppies, and the transfer of breeds. I think the old dog, Yadkin Tar Rattler. I looked at his permanent record one time, and he'd sold like 13 or 14 times. Well, every time he sold, Fred Miller got $15, $20, you know. So anyway, well, that's quite an accomplishment. And to think go ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying, getting back to the bigger hunts that I've won. That world hunt, I won, you know, getting hooked up with Roger and Gary at 2014 was the first Super Stakes that I won with Flo. And I, you know, 10 years later, this past year, I won the spring Super Stake with Scarlet Thread. I'd been in the finals of several Super Stakes, but them two, you know, to win Super Stakes is a big accomplishment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, in 2016, I got in the finals with Jane in the PKC World Hunt. That's the year Coy won with Bill. So that was a big, that first time I got in the finals of the PKC World. I've hunted in every one of them since the mid-90s and able to get in the finals. I mean, that shows you how tough the PKC works.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like they say it louder so the people in the back can hear. It is not easy to get in the finals in that hunt. That's a marathon, buddy.
It is.
Grind.
You've got to have a lot of, you got to have a good dog. You got to be a good handler. You can't just go off of luck on every cast. There's going to be some casts you need to catch a break to move on to the next one.
Yep.
But it seems like you've got to be mentally and physically strong that whole week at the PKC World.
Oh, yeah.
Let's look at this past one that Duel wanted. That top six was phenomenal with the every dog and every handler. Any of them guys has won quite a bit of the top six was in there.
Sure. I just watched that final just last night. I just finally got around to watching it on that Kane Stream Media, and it was right down to the wire. Mm-hmm. You know, And that's amazing, too. For old guys like me, I can sit at home now and I can watch those hunts. When I was thinking as they were playing that night and they got a visual of it all, we used to have to sit at the tennis center and have somebody try to call in on a cell phone. We'd type it out on the computer and put it on the message forum, you know, our play-by-plays and so forth. But we've come a long way, that's for sure. Well, I'm going to shift gears away from the dogs a little bit with you. Now, I see that you and your wife, I believe, have a business called Main Street Wellness. Is that correct?
That's kind of my wife's deal.
That's her thing.
But she okay. Well, she involves me. We do it together. We started trying to get healthy after our first daughter. We had her in 2013. And my wife had started, she went to a local gym up here and you know, we built a new house. We lived in an older house that we remodeled when we got married, and after we had our first baby and we was trying to have our second girl, our second baby, we didn't know it was going to be a girl, but we went on and started building a bigger house for, you know, for all of us.
Sure.
And we built a gym in our basement, or fixed a gym in our basement. And we just started, you know, making it a goal to eat healthier, work out, you know, try to get a workout in every day. And I think it's I'm 47 and I'm still, because you know, we started this in my 30s and I was at an age where I could have went either way. I was getting heavy because I tell this to people. I tell you how you realize when you're not in good shape. You go to Colorado and go try to snow ski in 2014, I guess it was, because it was a year after we had our daughter. We'd go every year. But that, I went up there and we, you know, while my wife was pregnant, I was becoming pregnant. I was eating bad and doing bad. And,
it's easy to do.
Yeah. Really. We went up there though. While I was getting talking about snow skiing, we was up there, and you know, when you get up there in that elevation and the air is up there, and I just realized, like, Cause she had already been trying to do some workout. I wasn't jumping aboard then. I was still thinking I was in good shape. It's not, you know, in my mind I was in good shape, but that trip there, realized I remember just bending down and trying to tie my shoes or doing something. And I'm like, I was out of breath cause he's up there in a high elevation.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I remember getting on the plane coming back home, and I looked at her and I said, "All right, I'm in with you." I realize I'm not as fit as I thought I was. We'll do something about it. We'll both, you know, and I think between me and her, and we've done good at, you know, keeping each other accounted for. You know, like one day she may not feel good, and I would, you know, say let's try to do a workout, and so I was helping, and we both helped each other. But she started doing that and kind of. Trying to help people get healthy.
Sure. Well, I wish I'd have done more along that line, you know, and I've told guys for years that just coon hunting will not keep you in shape.
No,
you know,
that's what my wife always said. I worked utilities, so I worked out in the field, repairing water leaks, or just, you know, always was active outside, but your body can adjust to things like that and get used to. But when you do a physical workout with weights or however, you shock your body in a way that it hadn't been, you know, if you start using muscles that you hadn't normally used,
right,
and you know, days after you'll be sore. And but that's what you know, to get really fit and really healthy. You have to weight train. You have to do a lot of cardio. You know, it all, and the main thing is eating right. You can do a lot of exercising, but if you're just eating French fries and cheeseburgers and going to all these fast food places and eating all this preservative food, it ain't good. I tell people, if you want to shop smart, if you go in a grocery store, instead of going down the aisles, you go around the perimeter of the store is the way to shop.
Yeah.
Go around there and get your fruit, get your vegetable, get your meats. And it, you might pass the ice cream section, but just keep on going the right way from that.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Hurry up and check out. Don't, but, you know, I try to tell people that want to, that like see me or my wife, you know, doing good in health. You know, it is hard to in the way we live, everybody's tries to do the convenient thing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, everybody goes and you got all these fast food places now that we didn't used to have years ago.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you can stay away from that stuff, stay away from preservatives, you know, things that right. can get sprayed, it's supposed to have shelf life. If you'll if you'll eat things that God put here, if you'll eat things like a fruit, vegetables, anything that you can set on the table and rid of rot in a few days, you can put that in your body. That's healthy.
Yeah.
Anything that's set here like and look the same 3 weeks later, probably don't need to put in your body.
That's true, Billy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. All right. I saved the best for last. Earlier this week, or maybe last week or something, I read something that a fellow put on Facebook, and it said, turning the hunt into a race, a hunter's walk with God. Was that you?
Yeah, well, me and my wife.
Tell me if you don't mind a little bit about that.
Well, with Shifter, you know, we started studying him out and breeding him, and my wife was, you know, we had talked about doing some, you know, shirts and things, and she's good at doing logos, and so she come across, we both come across this the verse, and it just stuck with him, and just thinking what we do with our dogs, keeping them, you know, we as a competition coon hunter, keeping your dog focused to win.
Right.
It is really, you know, looking at our life, we can get derailed and get on a bad path in our spiritual life. And just like a dog, prize is to win that, you know, coon hunt. Our prize is to get to heaven one day. I hope everybody does, but I think you got to stay focused, and it's hard for everybody. I think the devil does a good job down here keeping us derailed sometimes. Mm-hmm. We don't keep our focus on what, you know, look forward to.
Our pastor's been doing a series, and it's called Mind Your Business. Mm-hmm. And the whole focus is that Satan attacks our mind. That's where he, you know, he works on us. And just this last week, he talked about putting on the helmet of salvation and how, you know, and guarding our minds about, you know, and what you wrote there, you and Stephanie wrote and posted on Facebook was very moving, and it was also very good advice. And I urge all our listeners that are out there that get on Facebook, go to Billy Stephanie Bell and read that. And I think it's called Turning the Hunt into a Race. Mm-hmm. And I like that, Billy. That was very, very good.
Thank you, Steve. Just everything that's happened to me this past month with losing Roger.
Oh yeah.
It puts your mind in. We know when we're born, there's one fact that we know, we're destined to die at some point. Our time is going to be over for all of us, and it don't matter if you're a king or got a dime to your name. If you got a dime to your name, that's a dime more than you need when you leave here.
That's right.
So, yeah. You know, when you, it took me a while, Steve. I won't lie. It took me, when I'm in my younger years, I was a young person that loved to party. I'd go out and drink and run to women and do things I wasn't supposed to be. Took me a while to get, figure things out, I guess, and figure,
yeah.
My mom and dad had me in church when I was young, but when you get out, I don't know, 18.
No, yeah, we're bulletproof. Yeah, we think we know everything.
You're so far. You feel so good, and you don't think about death. No point in that when you're young. Mm-hmm. You think that's so far out of sight, but this life is really lot quicker. It goes by a lot quicker than people realize.
Well, my dad told me, he said, Steve, when you become 50, you're going to see how fast the years are going to roll. And he lived to be 88, and God bless her, my mother lived to be 100. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this coon hunting thing was something I've loved to do all my life. And all of a sudden, here I am. I can't really keep up with a cast anymore. I can still hear the dogs, but I can go out there and walk to these dogs that you guys are hunting today. It just doesn't happen. So, yeah, you know, we do get older, and I always think of that scripture. It says it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. So, you know, I think I'd be remiss on this podcast if I didn't tell all my friends out there, that have been so good to me all over the years. You got to get ready. You got to be ready. Right, Bill?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like we train, like we was talking about earlier. You train your dog to just tree coons and stay focused just on that coon. But, you know, dogs have a tendency to run trash. They get off on junk and do what they not supposed to do. That derails you for a little while. But, you know, our life and our journey is kind of the same thing. Mine has been. My younger years, you can say I was like a trashy dog. I was lusting after women, you know, going to beer joints and all that old stuff. And you get caught up in that. And then, but as I got older and started having my girls and thinking of, you know, what's coming next, losing my mom and dad was a tough one.
Yeah.
You start putting yourself, where do I come from? And mm-hmm. I'll tell this real quick.
Oh, you don't have to hurry, brother.
Well, I was just saying what really got me back to the Lord. I worked at a water treatment plant for about 18 years on Sundays. So for 18 years, and why I worked Sundays, the guy that was over our water plant, he was a preacher. So they volunteered me to work at the Sundays. So a lot of Sundays I didn't get to go to church. I try to make, occasional Easter Sunday and that thing. But I was there in the water plant, and y'all know if anybody worked at a water plant, it's a boring job. It's almost like being just babysitting, basically. So I was on YouTube, I think, and watching a video on old Phil Robertson, old Duck Commander. He was preaching at a thing, and he said today's date would be March the, what would be it, 25th, 26th now?
We're to 27th as we're recording this.
Okay, yesterday was March the 26th, 2025, the day before, and he said, just walking on back, something big happened back, year one, when Jesus came, that mm-hmm. we tell our time by it. When he said that, the way he said it, and thinking about it, and then I started researching it more. I started diving in, reading the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I started, reading, in the New Testament, kind of when Jesus was here more than mm-hmm. Starting at the Old, because there's a lot of stuff when you start from Genesis and go up.
Yeah,
it can get complicated. But I just wanted to make my focus on Jesus, just what he done here.
Yeah.
In the time that he was here, short time, died at 33, but died for all of us. We're indebted to him.
Sure.
Because we all come here sinning. Even when there was only two people on earth, Adam and Eve, it's recorded. Mm-hmm. It, you know, and then you got Cain and Abel, their sons. That was the first murder that we know about.
Yeah.
It's recorded in the Bible.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And I've it's read history. A lot of books. Yeah. I've read a lot of books, Steve, that humans have wrote. But there's nothing like the Bible, in my opinion. There's nothing that I've ever read.
It's a living document. They talk about our Constitution being a living document and you know, changing and all. But the Bible does not change. Mm. You know, he says same yesterday, today, and forever. Well, Billy, I'm just so encouraged by the fact that, you know, I talk to people all the time about their faith and all. And I was always a little self-conscious about in my writings and when I talked to the crowds at the hunts and all those years that I worked, because I didn't want people to think I was preaching at them, you know. Mm-hmm. But in reality, you know, God kind of dealt with me a little bit on that. And he said, you know, I know that the word says, you know, if we'll be ashamed of him, he's going to be ashamed of us. You know, he's not going to know us, you know, when the time comes. So
I think our purpose, Steve, is to, you know, once you dedicate your life for Jesus and what he done for us and you try to mimic how he lived when he was here. You know, you that's all you can do as a human is spread the word about him. Show that you're a Christian and you've got your faith and you're going to mess up. I have coon hunters call me a lot. And they said, you compete at a high level. How do you do it and still stay strong to your faith and I get tested. I've been out there in cast where, you know, there's ways to bend rules or do something wrong or do something right. And I won't lie. When I first started hunting in the competitions, I've tried to do good. And then, you know, when you're young, I was a kid around here where I grew up, it was competing in the cast. Older guys, they would cheat you around. You know, I had to draw a lot of tough competition right here where I live. And so I got done wrong. Well, I started trying to be revengeful. You know, I'll do this to win. And, you know, it takes a lot of learning going through the years to where you done wrong, to where you done right. You know, me you got to do a little living to look back at what you done wrong or right. And, you know, I started, you know, doing bad in the cast, cheating or doing whatever I could to try to win. I thought I had to win. But then, you know, after me getting saved again and getting my life back in focus, you're going to get tested out there if you're competing at a high level. But the main thing is don't worry about earthly things here. Set yourself up for what's laying ahead of us. Don't jeopardize your
future for a few minutes here.
Over just what we got here. Because what we got here, we ain't gonna take it.
It's temporary, and the old joke. Right. It's an old joke when you see, you know, you don't see a hearse with a U-Haul trailer on. But, you know, and that is, as you get older, Billy, that'll become even more real to you as you get my age, because I know if I get 8 more years, that's 10 more years is what my dad lived. Now, 10 years is not a long time.
Hey, you know, when you get our age now, when your age, Steve, but well, this was a funny story that we're getting back to home about old McAfee. He'll be 84. If he makes it to August the 17th, that's his birthday, he'll be 84.
Yeah.
And he told me when he was in his 60s, he said, Billy, a year will go by like going down the road and passing a light pole, and you go to that next one. He said, a year, when you get in your 60s, a year will go by that quick. He said, it's about like going down the road passing a light
pole. He's about right, too. He is about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Billy, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. I know you're busy. You got a family there and three women, man, in the house. How do you cope with all that, man? It'll get more interesting as those girls get older.
I was going to say, my oldest one is about to be 12 and my youngest one's 7.
Yeah.
It's very challenging.
I'm sure.
I tell my oldest one, I stay pretty calm and pretty laid back. Anybody that knows me, I've always been
Yes,
calm.
Indeed. Yeah.
My oldest daughter can test me more than any human on earth. I tell her, I said, I can feel the devil get into me sometimes where I want to get
That old saying, I think it was Bill Cosby or something, said, I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out. Yeah, well, I hope to meet your lovely wife someday and your girls and all, and certainly wish you the best. I'll be looking, watching you pop up there in those Final Fours and stuff. What hunt you got looking at now? You got an entry anywhere that you're going to be hunting pretty soon?
Not really. We got, our St. Jude hunt is coming up in second. It's always the second weekend in April.
Right.
This is going to be a special year for it because it's the 50th anniversary.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's the 50th anniversary. I think it was something on Facebook the other day I read it. I think they've raised in the 30 or 50 years, close to $6 million, something like that.
Yeah, that's amazing because back when we were doing it, AKC had it for a short time there. When I went to AKC, I went down and I talked to, what's the gal's name there? I can't think of the girl that her daddy was involved with it too. I can't think of her name
There's been a lot of.
Yeah.
Over the 50 years, there's been a lot of, it's. That amazes me is how much, a little community like
that
I live in here, Parsons, every year it'll be, 300 to 400 or 500 or maybe even more. The coon hunt itself used to hunt somewhere in the $300, $400, $500.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
I don't think it hunts quite that no more. But I don't think they ain't hardly very many hunts anymore to hunt some season.
No.
But the people that come is from all over. They don't even, maybe not even a coon hunter, but they'll come just for the whole
thing. Oh, yeah, it's an amazing thing. And I was fortunate enough to go on two occasions to the St. Jude Hospital where they presented us with a big check, showing the contribution for that year. They had the big check made as for the coon hunt's contribution to St. Jude. And it'd be $250,000 or something. At that time, the hunt had raised over $3 million, but now it's
close to $6 million. I think it's 5,000, 600, something thousand. I wish I could remember the exact amount, but going on a 50-year span, that's a lot of money.
It is. It certainly is.
And that's a great thing. That St. Jude Hospital has helped many kids that's been sick. I think it's got to be one of the best charitable or donation things that you can donate your money.
Without a doubt. If you can go into that hospital, and I've been there twice, and see those little bald-headed kids, and not come out there a changed man or woman. You're a stone. You're a rock. That's all I can say for you. Yeah. And, they have some of those cancers now, there's over a 90% survival rate due to the research that they've done. It's just amazing what they do. And hear those parents tell the stories. The one thing that they get when they walk through those doors is hope. It's a great charity, no doubt about it. Well, I hope that goes extremely well this year and get a good report on that. Billy, I really appreciate you coming on with me. I asked you for an hour, and you've given me an hour and 34 minutes, buddy. So Is there anything that we didn't talk about that we should have, or anything you'd like to leave with the listeners?
I can't think of nothing, Steve. I think I've laid out everything in my mind. I appreciate you calling me and doing this. I think these podcasts are important to document, my story and
sure
and a lot of stories. That,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why we do them, Billy, is to get it a matter of record that somebody can go back. Your girls and your grandchildren and so will be able to listen to their granddad or their dad tell stories about coon hunting. How great is that, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, for
Steve,
sure.
I appreciate you. Oh. I appreciate you calling me and doing this with you. And I hope I get to see you soon. I ain't seen you.
Yeah. Well, if the Lord's willing, I'll try to make that hunt in October in Aurora. That'd be a great place. Great reunion.
That's right.
Tell your brother Avery hello for me too.
I will.
All right.
Thank you, buddy.
You bet. Billy Bell. Everybody knows the name in competition coon hunting. Really appreciate him coming on tonight and sharing with us. I want to thank my sponsors, W Hunting Supply, DUSupply.com, Alpha Dog Nutrition, and also my friend Big Mark Zepp with Zepp Predator Calls. That's going to do it for this week, folks, on the Gone to the Dogs podcast. If anybody asks you where I am, it's easy. Just tell him he's gone to the dogs.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.